Well, sometimes they have to kill us. They have to kill us. Because they can't break our spirit.
Look, I don't have to do this.
You don't have any choice.
I'm trying to help you people. Now, why won't you accept that?
It's in our DNA. You have to do what old man says.
What makes you such a threat?
We choose the right to be who we are. We know the difference between the reality of freedom and the illusion of freedom. There's a way to live with Earth and a way not to live with Earth. We choose the way of Earth. It's about power, Ray.
You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Atawehis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Friends, this is your co-host, Will Bluewater. Join us now to learn how to legally worship using indigenous earth-based healing and empowering ceremonies. Aho. As Bluewater, seventh great-grandson of Old Tassel, first beloved man of the Cherokee, I'm remembering what Old Tassel said to the prevailing culture. Many proposals have been made to us to adopt your laws, your religion, your manners, and your customs. We have done so. Now it is time for our cultures to accept Old Tassel's ways and assisting us to walk in harmony with Mother Earth and Father Sky. Aho.
Grandfather, teach me the ways of the old, so that I may remember who I am.
And who I am is Will Bluewater, Osio Ginli Tohigu, which means I'm well. How are you? Our guest this evening is Russ Jensen. The last time we had Russ on the show, he discussed the Constitution and the Law of Nations. And I'm not sure. Can you hear me, Russ?
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Gotcha. Okay, I didn't hear any background sound, and that's a great connection. And yeah, I really enjoyed. You know, the last time we got together. The Law of Nations is mentioned in the Constitution, but it's in lowercase for some reason. But the kicker is I understand all the, you know, freshmen, congressmen and senators, they study the Law of Nations. And but tonight we're going to talk about a little bit different kind of a Christmas tree. the cannabis tree. Anyway, my attention is that it does look like a Christmas tree. I've seen them dressed up with ornaments. But, yeah, you want to talk about constitutional cannabis and constitutionalcannabis.com. And, yeah, tell us what you're up to.
Okay. Well, I appreciate having me back on the show again. It's been quite a while. So, and but I've been working on expanding on my understanding of the Law Nation, trying to help other people get a better understanding and really get a better understanding of the true nature of the reality that we find ourselves in. And it impacts all aspects of our society, our life, what's been happening with our governance, which has a huge impact not only on us as people, but all the other species on this planet. So I think it's very important that we start getting ourselves properly educated so that we can, I guess, start to interact properly with our governmental authorities and as, you know, members of society, understanding better what our duties and obligations are and our benefits and rights that come from that. And that's what's so powerful about that book, Law of Nations, is it details a lot of those things very specifically and gives us as individuals a lot of authority. A lot of people don't really understand your Constitution is fundamental law. Therefore, it's really designed to organize governmental structure. Doesn't really speak to you specifically as a member of that society. Pretty much just says what the government can and cannot do when it's operating constitutionally. But inside that book, it then starts to speak to us as individual members of whatever society we happen to be operating in. It gives us a lot of better idea of where all of our true authority comes from that the government is operating on. It also gives us a lot of remedies that we can utilize to sort of rein them in if we need be. And what's interesting about the book Wild Nations, a lot of people don't realize, is that it was originally published in 1757, and it was in the hands of the men that were forming both the original Articles of Confederation and then also they utilized it to write your Declaration of Independence and also the current Constitution that we're operating under. And so it is very, it's well known, not to the general populace, because that's why they like to keep things hidden away from us. But
that's amazing,
by the people in government understand it for sure. So.
Yeah, it's amazing how little people know about the Law of Nations and how much there is to it. But, and by the way, I lost audio for a minute, so I had to get up my phone. This has been happening more and more recently. I don't understand why, but anyway, yeah, please continue.
All right, so like I said, it becomes very important for us when, especially dealing with issues of individual liberties, governments are instituted to protect individual property rights, individual rights, naturally occurring rights. What they talk about in the Declaration of Independence, those unalienable or unalienable, whichever you want to pronounce it, naturally occurring rights of life and liberty, pursuit of happiness. And that's another common misperception. People thought, oh, well, it was pursuit of property and they changed it to happiness. But when you start reading the Law of Nations, it talks about that very specifically, working towards your own perfection, fulfilling your own purpose of being here. And in doing that, you perfecting yourself as an individual, you then begin to perfect your society. If I'm better, you're better. That's the concept. That's the idea. And so it becomes important for us then to understand how things operate from a natural standpoint all the way up until where we're at to today. And that's the great thing about this particular book, because it speaks about those things very clearly. What it's done is it's taken the laws of nature, and they're not the same laws that people relate to as the law of the jungle, you know, survival of the fittest, but it's the laws of nature similar to the same, in the same class as your laws of gravity, thermodynamics, physics, but just how things are. naturally occurring. It doesn't require your effort whatsoever for these things to occur. And so it's looking at humans from way back in the day when we were just here wandering around, and then we begin interacting and talking about governments, and the obligations and the rights that then we have to start dealing with because we're now beyond ourselves. Now, if you just think for just a second what you are, you're a man, maybe you're a woman, but you're a human. You're here walking around. But if you stop and think about what you really are, is you're not that body, are you? You're that conscious awareness that's experiencing things here in this realm through that physical body so you can interact here physically. And so you have perfect liberty all the time, don't you, to do whatever you want to do. Even if there's a law that says you can't do that, if you decide you want to run across the street naked, you can run across the street naked, can't you? So we have to understand that as individuals, conscious awareness that's here, the place that we don't really know where we're at, neither do they, planet Earth, supposedly floating in the endless expanse of space, but what we do know for a fact is that you're here experiencing having some kind of experience, physical, mental, spiritual, feeling, thinking, and that you are here, and this is a hard thing for most people to understand, that you are here having that experience completely, totally alone, by yourself, singular. Now, you're surrounded by millions, actually billions of other humans walking around the planet right now. But every one of them is having a singular experience specifically for them. And that's where we start talking about, start trying to get an understanding of sovereignty, sovereign authority, and understanding what that is, because there isn't anything else outside of the animal kingdom and the physical aspects of the planet, the earth, the rocks, water, air. There's only people. There's no such thing as, there's no physical concept of government. It is people interacting with one another. And that's the overall concept of government, is that we come together because it's difficult to survive on this planet by yourself. And in nature, that's one of these laws of nature, naturally occurring. You were walking around by yourself, then you ran into me one day walking around by myself, and then it was two of us, and so we start working together. Agreements and contracts between men is the primary natural law that nobody ever talks about. But is the everything that your entire society is predicated upon the natural law of contracting, agreements? And in understanding that, without going, there's thousands of books of and laws on contracts and terms and different things like that. But the basic premise of contracting and agreements is that it has to be two elements have got to be in place. Number one, there's got to be a total and complete understanding between the parties. And that has been predicated upon a total and complete understanding based upon honesty and truthfulness. Because you can't really have a contract that's fair to all the parties if one party has lied about something or one party has been less than forthcoming about certain aspects and facts that would influence you to make that decision or not to make that decision. Those are the basic tenets of contracting. Now, people complain all the time, hey, my elected officials, they lie to us. We know they lie, but we can't do anything about it except to maybe wait until next time and vote them out. Well, that's not true. Contracts, because they're so elementary, they're actually a requirement of the natural law, and it's codified in this book, Law of Nations, talks about the fact that men have an absolute duty and obligation to one another to act honorably and truly. So trying to put this book in its proper context without getting lost like I sometimes get off on these tangents.
Yeah, me too.
It's in that Constitution. It's constitutional law. And every word in that book is constitutional law. Now, people understand the Constitution is the supreme law of the land, as everybody says, everybody believes that they understand. So if there's a statement in your Constitution that says that you and I have to act honorably and truly between one another as just private members of that society, it stands to reason that there's a much higher bar, a much higher standard that's expected from those of us that then we're delegating some of our sovereign authority to act on our behalf, to be honest and true to us. Now, to go back and understand the fact that you can come here and do anything you want all the time and have 100% total liberty and control over what you do. There's nobody else in your back pocket or in your head that's telling you what you should or shouldn't be doing besides you. Is there?
Yep.
So you have total sovereign authority, and that's one of the definitions of sovereignty, is that there's no higher law. There's no law above that, that sovereign. And so we have total and complete sovereign authority, and that's how our government operates. So we say in the Declaration of Independence, instituted on the consent of the governed. And so we give, you and I decide we're going to give somebody else some permission to act on our behalf, to do things that we can't do, shouldn't be doing, might not be able to do. But we're delegating authority, not giving it away. It doesn't diminish my authority. I'm just agreeing that I'm going to give somebody else a little bit of that, and I might agree to act in certain ways to help the society be more stable, because we come together as individuals for mutual safety and benefit. That's the only purpose of government, is to do that, to work on my behalf, to work on your behalf, to work on the behalf of the members of that society in general. So if we have something that's a constitutional command, basically, to be honest and true, and the Constitution of the United States of America, the Constitution of the United States, is supposedly the supreme law of the land, how is it possible that these so-called elected officials that we've delegated now some of our authority to believe that they have immunity from telling us the truth, being honest with us about matters that have a direct impact upon us? They can't. That's another tenet of law. There's only one thing that's prosecutable under law, and all your criminal laws, civil laws, everything are predicated upon this one thing: failure of a known duty, either a known duty to do something or a known duty to not do something. That's it. And everything else flows from that. So we now have a elected official who's been delegated some authority to act on our behalf, operating under the constraints of their Constitution, they're supposed to be, who's been given a constitutional command, basically, his known duty now is to act honorably and true. If he lies to us, isn't that failing in his known duty to be honest and true? So that leaves them open. They start to lose the so-called immunity of their office, the sovereign immunity that they claim that they have. So there's a lot of things in this book, Law of Nations, and part of what I'm doing with this book, Constitutional Cannabis, is trying to explain a lot of these diverse concepts and take a lot of the research that's been done by hundreds, thousands of different patriots throughout the years and trying to make our way through the absolute insane maze of rules and regulations and laws and statutes and case law and all these different things to help us get some kind of a better idea on how it is that we can regain control of our governance and how
great
it is
idea.
That we can do. What's that?
That's a great idea.
Yeah. So, and it's doable. The problem we've had in the past is there's been some things that's gone on by our elected officials over the years and unelected officials also that have contravened so-called the change of the Constitution. That's what they're always talking about. Is it unconstitutional, non-constitutional? A lot of things that we look at, what's happening in our society today, the things that our government is imposing upon us. And we look at the Constitution, the simple words in it, and there's a huge disconnect. We have to ask ourselves, how is that possible? When the Constitution says, no state shall make anything but gold and silver coin payment of debt, and yet what do they offer to us to use? Federal Reserve debt notes.
Yeah.
So, and the problem then becomes is that we aren't really educated enough ourselves in a lot of the ways that the law works. Constitutional law, what applies, what doesn't apply. And that's really what I've been working on, is simplifying those things down to bite-sized chunks that are fairly easy to comprehend, and then put together in an overall larger comprehensive picture, and then come up with some working strategies that we can then begin to implement, that we can begin to do to engage with our elected officials, unelected officials, to start getting answers and start getting the kind of things there that we want to have happening for us. And part of that, too, becomes learning how to defend ourselves against some of these unconstitutional actions, and the primary way to do that is to be educated about what it is that they're bringing to bear against us. And if we understand better how the system that they're operating under put together and how it applies to us or doesn't apply to us, we stand a much better chance in prevailing on our position, or keep ourselves out of jail or our loved ones out of jail, and just eliminate a lot of problems for ourselves, and also gives us a better opportunity then that we can start to seek damages if they have, in fact, overstepped their constitutionally mandated authority, which they've done in a lot of ways. So, and the Law of Nations provides us with a lot of remedies, a lot of authority to do those things. It tells us in what situations that we can openly resist against the sovereign. Now, I should probably explain, in that book, Law of Nations, it explains specifically, and these have become the constitutional definitions that we use when we start establishing any kind of legal paperwork or any kind of a position that we want to take. We go straight to the Constitution to get definition of words, not from Black's Law, not from lawyers' guilds or anything else. We take as much as possible out of this book, Law of Nations, because it is even superior to your Constitution, because it was written first. It's the foundation that document was built upon. So we try to rely on that as much as possible. But in there it talks about what sovereignty is, being the very form of the government that I mentioned briefly in the beginning. And then also about the sovereigns are. Those are the members of society that are sitting in the office of sovereignty, and then they're exercising what's called the sovereign authority, and that's your authority. That comes from you. The sovereign in and of itself, and the office of sovereignty in and of itself, does not have any authority unless it's been granted to them by you and I. And that's what that Constitution is about, and doing that. But there's a lot of groups running around, sovereign citizen groups and patriot groups and, free man and land, all those different things. But they're not understanding that why a lot of their remedies and processes aren't working for them is because they're using their own definitions, and they're not using the right, the proper law to establish their positions upon. And so that's why it becomes very important for people to read this book, all of it. There's preliminaries, and then there's four books, those two. Talks about the laws of war, diplomatic portions, commerce, nations, the interaction between nations and sovereignty and sovereigns. And so it's not just for governments, not just for kings and queens and ambassadors and international law. It is everything about your society here, the United States of America. And it also explains, when you start reading it, how they've gotten away with some of the stuff that they are doing right now today, taking simple words out of that Constitution and then taking some simple words out of this particular book and giving themselves unlawfully authorization to do certain things. And then they start operating upon an implied consent and acquiescence, which is basically if you don't say anything about it, you are agreeing. That's their mindset. Right? They lied about it, didn't tell us. what was out, what was going on, how they were doing things. That's where their problems start to come in. But if we don't know what they're doing, we can't.
That's how they, in 1924, that's how they snuck a lot of Native Americans into U.S. citizenship.
Yes, that's right. That's right. In fact, y'all can probably look it up. There are things in that book, Wild Nations, that talk about specifically what happens. And they violated that in all kinds of ways. Of course, we already know they didn't keep a lot of the treaty terms and things like that. But there are things in there then that then can also give the Native sovereign nations, even though they may have be told that, well, you guys acquiesced and you gave up, but there's language in this book, Law of Nations, that empowers those sovereign nations of the indigenous Americans, real Americans, what I call them, that really have some real grounds that they can bring some actions, both in international courts and here in the United States also. And so there's a lot in there that's not talked about. And it's not talked about specifically because it's so powerful when you start understanding how it all fits together and what it is that they're doing. And it, like I said, it gives us a lot of remedies, a lot of better ability to be properly educated and talking in the right language, using the right words, bringing the actions in the proper places so that they then begin to have to respect us. Put ourselves on this on an equal footing with them, because if we understand the nature of sovereignty itself, that there's no higher authority. And so that's one of the issues we have to be against. And like the United States doesn't go up to Canada and tell Canada how to run its country.
That's right.
Well, they do kind of through all kinds of other ways, but they shouldn't have, they don't really have the authority, because Canada can say, well, we're our own sovereign nation and you leave us alone, and you know, and that's how wars start, things like that. But the idea is that the sovereign has no higher authority. And so that's the problem we come into when you have a group that's like just hijacked the governance of the United States of America, you know, and taken all that authority, all that power, and made themselves pretty much invincible. They don't have to answer to anybody, but they do have to answer still to those members that they are operating, their whose authority they are exercising. Now, people talk about it all the time, but there aren't really good specific strategies on how to go about reclaiming that. And we have to be very careful when we start talking about engaging with your government, wanting to change things, change the way things are operating, what's happening. Because we have to be careful that we're not talking about changing the nature of government, but we're talking about changing the individual men and women that are in the offices acting as the sovereigns, exercising this sovereign authority for the sovereignty, which is the government. So that's where a lot of these groups get in trouble, too, as they start putting themselves in these areas of seditious treason, you know, undermining the authority of the government, things like that. So we have to be very careful when we're doing things on the words that we're using, what we're saying, who we're saying it to, and how we're saying it. It also gives us all the rules of doing that here in this book, Wild Nations. So,
it's amazing that the moment they're taught about from civics, that's what really floored me.
Yeah, now, it's
you know, a guy, you know, going back to the 70s, you got guys like William Colby, I think it was, that said that, you know, their aim was, you know, director of CIA, you know, their aim was to make sure that the American public had no idea what was going on in the government. So
right.
they're very open about it.
Yeah. Well, that is right. You're right. That's one of the great things about it. They honor this book. They honor the words in it, the concepts in it, because, and it applies to every government on this planet, not just here in the United States. Now, more powerful for us because it's actually incorporated by direct reference in Article 1, Section 8, Clause 10. Talks about that, law of nations and piracy and spying felonies and all that stuff. But it's applicable across the globe. And what's happening now, what has been going on for a long time, you know, the same mechanisms are being in place, or, you know, all the other countries, the same ones have been brought that they've used on us here, monetary system primarily, and what they do with that, how they use that to change your status, to change your political jurisdiction without you really being aware of it, understanding it, what really has happened. So, but it does give us, like I said, gives us remedies. And when we start reading their code books, their statutes, their rules, their regulations, and start piecing those things together, also gives us a very strong position to run from. In fact, the United States Code, USC, that everybody always quotes to, where your Title 18 criminal codes are found in Title 26 and 28, which is the judicial branch, and 5. But it's not law. It's evidence of law. It's like that's a good word, a smoking gun. Yeah, that might be evidence of a murder or might be evidence of some violent conflict, but without bodies, there's nothing. It's just blank evidence. Doesn't mean anything. So the United States Code is an amalgamation of statutes at large, which are the legislative acts that are written by Congress. And your states have the exact same kind of thing they've got. But so it kind of condenses things down. But when you start looking at these things and understanding that it's prima facie, can be rebutted, and start reading, and, there's been a lot of people doing a lot of research on these things, especially in Title 26 about taxing provisions and things like that, but also Title 18. Most of those apply specifically to officers of the United States or people that live in those territories, such as Colombia, Guam, some of those different territorial areas that Congress have exclusive legislative authority over under Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17, and then also in Article 4. We're talking about where they have the power to dispose of, make needful rules and regulations respecting the territories and properties that belong to the United States. Now, if I'm not an officer in the state, not any of those things, how is it then they're applying all those criminal statutes in Title 18 to me? Well, what they've done is through the monetary system, they apply, they've made you into an officer, of a public officer of the United States. You start reading these things, you start understanding the FDIC, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, and the fact that these banks, and you read the bank acts and things like that, you'll also find out that all those bank acts back in the 1930s, the 34th or 5, those also don't apply generally across the board. Now, one way that we can check on that for sure is that there is a requirement that anything that applies to general applicable law across the board to everybody out here in the state has to be published in the Federal Register Regulations. Now, there's another book called the Code of Federal Regulations, too, which goes to that. But if it's not published in the Federal Register, it doesn't have general applicability. It has special limited applicability to specific classes of people, specific places, territorial, primarily in the areas that are controlled by Congress under its exclusive legislative authority that I just talked about, in Article 1, 16, 10, and 17, and then also Article 4. But what they've done, if you read those bank acts and start understanding what is happening, is when they created the Federal Reserve, they denoted that as public money. Now, if you go look and read the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation Act, talks about insured deposits. That's what it says. I'll read this right out of the act. It's 12 U.S.C. 1811. Each officer, employee, or agent of the United States or any state of the United States, of the District of Columbia, any territory of the United States, Puerto Rico, Guam, America, Sola, Samoa, Virgin Islands, any county or municipality or other political subdivision thereof, herein called public unit, having official custody of public funds and lawfully depositing the same in an insured bank, having official custody of public funds and lawfully depositing the same in the insured bank in custodial capacity. They turned you into custodial officer. You have public money in your pocket. You have a bank account that you have opened in your name. What we're talking about here is it's the depositors separate and distinct from any other officer, employer, agent of the same unit or public unit. And so what they've done is they've now, through your own action, having and utilizing these Federal Reserve notes, bank accounts at a federally insured bank, which is at, and that FDIC is a private corporation also, their exclusive legislative authority. So they've turned you into that without you really knowing and understanding that that's what happened. Now, the problem is that they have forced that upon us. So our rights of necessity, our right to self-preservation, our right to our unalienable right of life, we didn't really have a choice. I had to use that money because you guys took everything up. You took the gold and silver coin out of circulation. In fact, you've imprisoned people that have tried to bring back gold and silver coins as methods of bartering and exchange. So we start talking about rights of necessity. And like I said, that's just one simple little example of how it is that we have to start getting educated about what it is that they're using against us in order to get us into these jurisdictions, in order to bring these things upon us that would not necessarily have, they wouldn't have jurisdictional authority to any of those laws, all those laws to operate upon you as a man out here in the so-called states of the union, which are all independent nation states. They're separate from each other as Germany and England. There's a lot of those different things that we, to cobble all that stuff together and take people from one, from the very beginning to the very end, to kind of navigate through all that to get a better understanding of who you are, where your real authority is, how it is that they have infringed upon that, and how they've done certain things that they didn't have authority to do except by force, which is what they've done, and they've done it through fraud and deceit also. Now, the problem we have is trying to get people that are in positions of authority, our court systems, our legislative bodies, the law enforcement people, to want to institute and bring back true constitutional law, because they're very restricted by that. They lose a lot of their authority and the power and the ability to do things that they're doing right now if they go back to that. So that's where we're going to end up having to get a lot of people better educated about how the system works, what we can do to bring it back. And that's the whole, I guess that's the crux of this book that I've been working on for quite a long time. I'm calling it constitutional cannabis because it happens to be one of those areas in which the federal government has overstepped their bounds, has done things that may not necessarily under a true constitutional authority don't have the authority to regulate those types of commodities like they do. Now, they say they do the Interstate Commerce Clause, but there's a whole long section in the book that talks about why it is that they don't have that and the mechanisms that they've used to bring things out here into the states, because you really don't have a constitutional republic out here any longer. Haven't had for a long time. They're doing it under non-constitutional legislative, administrative courts that are put together at the states, and they're operating an admiralty, vice admiralty, which is either contract or a member of the government organization, either state or federal. And they do the same thing at the state level, too, in changing their status from a human being, a little living man, individual conscious awareness into an officer of their particular governmental unit that we talked about. So so there's a lot there, but I think the book lays it out a lot better than me just rambling, because I just get kind of get off. There's so many trails that we can go down, but that's the thing about the book. I've tried to keep it very very linear in moving from one point to another and moving through all these different things. We also have to understand about our system of law, what it is. We also have to understand this current system of law. We have to understand a little bit about maxims of law, how those apply, and how that means, what that really means when we start to challenge jurisdiction, because that's everything. They don't have jurisdiction, they can't move forward. And so we start challenging their jurisdiction based on these things that we've talked about a little bit, and then also about their own actions that are unconstitutional. We start asking them these specific questions about, hey, why are you doing that? You don't have authority to. Where's the authority to act in that manner come from? And so I think we can make a pretty good case of the fact that they've done things through the Article 4 area of being able to we talk about no state shall, there's no other states can be granted, maybe admitted by Congress into the Union. No new state shall be formed or erected within the jurisdiction of any other state, nor any state formed by the junction of two or more states or parts of states, without the consent of the legislatures of the states concerned, as well as of the Congress, and thus prohibiting them from doing anything. A lot of people say, well, that stops them from doing that. But the way I read it, it says, well, the consent of the legislatures and the consent of the Congress got together and formed a new state that they overlaid the de jure states out here. And that's how they brought all this Roman civil law, statutory law, admiralty. So, well, they had jurisdiction in the admiralty and maritime anyways, but brought it out here into the states further than the way that they have. And I'm not saying that's necessarily a bad thing. I mean, you've got to look at how your society is, all the great things that we've done. But there's a lot of misery that's gone along with that, too. And I think that's where we have to start looking at how we're going to maintain sustainability in our societies over a longer period of time, because what we're doing right now is awesome. So.
Well, listen, I know you got company, and you know, talk as long as you want to, but next time we talk, let's talk about the Law of Nations and how it relates to churches, and maybe talk about Vatican law, because that's what the U.S. government claims is their authority to conquer, you know, people. So yeah, let's get together.
Oh, well,
again.
Yeah, we can talk about that for sure. And probably by the next time, I'll probably have at least the first draft of this book prepared. You will have a chance to have read it. And so, like I said, there's a lot going on, a lot of things, but we have to start getting better educated, and we have to think together in a cohesive
Absolutely.
Of learning. So we're all offering from the same thing, because there's so much information out there, and I think that's part of what they rely on, is just keeping people so divided and so confused and so misinformed, uninformed. That's one of the things too we talk about, or I talk about, is that we don't have to do anything that's destructive. It's part of the problem about these groups like Anonymous and some of these other groups is they become destructive. They become, and then that just gives the other side more reason to kind of close things down, because it's saying, hey, look, everybody's out of control. We've got to control society. So,
that's right. Well, listen, you have a Merry Christmas, and we'll talk again.
Yeah, you do the same, and I'll shoot you out a copy of this first draft as soon as we finish up here, probably next week or so. And,
okay.
I apologize. I'm a little rambling all over the place on a few things.
No. That's exactly what we need to hear. And Merry Christmas to everybody out there, and Happy New Year. And Russ, we'll be talking to you again sometime soon.
Okay, well, appreciate all you do out there, Will. So keep things up.
Thank you so much.
Put on a mask for me, will you?
Oh, I will.
Okay.
Good night, everybody.
Hi, friends. This is Will Bluewater.
If you have been listening to our program for long, then you know that Mark the Badger Borcherding does a Mayan birth reading for each of our interview guests. Mark suggested that he give away a free reading for each donation of $20 or more to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a ministry of Oklahoma Native American Church or the White Roots of Peace. So please support Prophecy Keepers Radio by making your free will offering at nativeamericanchurch.us, and you'll receive this gift reading. If you choose to make a recurring donation, once you've received your own reading, you can give readings away as free gifts. So why not head over to nativeamericanchurch.us and make an offering right now. Hope to be talking with you soon. Bye now.
They have to kill us. They have to kill us. Because they can't break our spirit.
Friends, this is Will Blue Otter, encouraging you to obtain an authorized participant or AP card and become a federally recognized Native religious practitioner. Presently, Oklahoma Native American Church is the only Native American church spiritually blessed by the Rosebud Reservation Native American Church and has a certificate of existence in the state of Utah that is authorized to worship on or off tribal grounds and has met the standard of sincerity and vow of poverty standards in the state of Utah and federal courts. This card is designed to assist all people regardless of their racial makeup, political affiliation, social and/or financial status, and receiving their constitutional rights. This card is also designed to assist United States judicial officials to honor their solemn oath to protect and exercise the principles of the United States Constitution while carrying out their duty and serving their fellow citizens. To join the movement that is strengthening and exercising the principles of the United States Constitution, please obtain your AP card by visiting NativeAmericanChurch.us today.
Dry ground, sagebrush and mesquite and chaparral around, out away's a big dust devil moving on its way. I guess they're never still. In a sacred manner I live, to the heavens I gaze. In a sacred manner I live. My horses are many. The high grass and the cedar, the mighty oak and the tiny flower, the sandstone in the valley, mountains high and running streams. In a sacred manner I live, to the heavens I gaze. In a sacred manner I live. My horses are many. The road.